Chapter 3. Language Lessons. Jarvis smiled at the memory. By that time, the sun was pretty low, and I knew that I'd better build a fire or get into my thermal bag. I decided on the fire, so I picked a spot at the base of the Thyle Cliff where the rock could reflect a little heat on my back. I started breaking off pieces of some dry Martian plants, and my companion caught the idea and brought some more. I reached for a match, but the Martian fished into his bag and brought out something that looked like a glowing coal. One touch of it and the fire was burning brightly. You all know how difficult it is to start a fire in this atmosphere. And that bag of his, continued Jarvis, that was something artificial, my friends. If you pressed an end, it popped open, but if you pressed the middle, it sealed so perfectly you couldn't see the line. Better than zippers. Well, we stared at the fire a while, and I decided to attempt some sort of communication with the Martian. I pointed at myself and said, "Dick." He understood immediately, pointed at me and repeated, "Tick." Then I pointed at him, and he made that sound I called tweel, but I can't imitate his accent. Things were going smoothly. To emphasize the name, I repeated, "Dick," and then pointing at him, "Tweel." There we got stuck. He made some noises that sounded negative and said something like, "P-p-p-p-prut," and that was just the beginning. I was always Tick, but as for him, part of the time he was Tweel, and part of the time he was "P-p-p-p-prut," and part of the time he was 16 other noises. We just couldn't connect. I tried rock, and I tried star, and tree, and fire, and who knows what else, and try as I would, I couldn't get a single word. Nothing was the same for 2 entire minutes, and if that's a language, I'm a magician. Finally, I gave it up and called him Tweel, and that seemed to be enough. But Tweel hung on to some of my words. He remembered a couple of them, which I suppose is a great achievement if you're used to a language you have to make up as you go along, but I couldn't get the hang of his talk. Either I missed some subtle point, or we just didn't think alike. I rather believe the latter view. I've other reasons for believing that. After a while, I gave up using language and tried mathematics. I scratched 2 + 2 = 4 on the ground and demonstrated it with small rocks. Again, Tweel caught the idea and informed me that 3 + 3 = 6. Once more, we seemed to be getting somewhere. So, knowing that Tweel had at least an elementary school education, I drew a circle for the sun, pointing first at it, and then at the last glow of the sun. Then I drew in the planet Mercury, and Venus, and Mother Earth, and Mars. Finally, pointing to Mars, I swept my hand around in a sort of inclusive gesture to indicate that Mars was our current environment. I was working up to suggesting the idea that my home was on Earth. Tweel understood my picture all right. He poked his beak at it and added the moons of Mars and then drew in Earth's moon as well. Do you see what that proves? It proves that Tweel's race uses telescopes, that they're civilized.
It does not, snapped Harrison.
The moon is clearly visible from Mars, so they could see its rotation with the naked eye.
The moon, yes, said Jarvis. You've missed my point. Mercury isn't visible. And Tweel knew of Mercury because he placed the moon at the third planet, not the second. If he didn't know Mercury, he'd put Earth second and Mars third instead of fourth. See?
Humph, said Harrison.
Anyway, proceeded Jarvis, I went on with my lesson. Things were going smoothly, and it looked as if I could convey my idea. I pointed at Earth on my drawing, and then at myself. And finally, I pointed to myself, and then to Earth itself, shining bright green in the night sky. Tweel started such an excited clacking that I was certain he understood. He jumped up and down, and suddenly he pointed at himself, and then at the sky, and then at himself, and at the sky again. He pointed at his middle, and then at one star, at his head, and then at another star, at his feet, and then at half a dozen stars while I just stared at him. Then all of a sudden, he gave a giant leap. Man, what a hop. He shot 75 feet straight up into the night sky. Then I saw him turn and come down at me head first and land right on his beak like a spear. There he stuck in the center of my sun circle in the sand, a bullseye. Crazy, observed the captain. Plain crazy. That's what I thought, too. I just stared at him open-mouthed while he pulled his head out of the sand and stood up. Then I decided he'd missed my point, and I went through the whole process again, and it ended the same way, with Tweel on his nose in the middle of my picture. Maybe it's a religious custom, suggested Harrison. Maybe, said Jarvis doubtfully. Well, there we were. We could exchange ideas up to a certain point, and then everything would fall apart. Something in us was different, not related. I don't doubt that Tweel thought me just as strange as I thought him. Our minds simply looked at the world from different perspectives. And perhaps his perspective is as true as ours. But we couldn't get together, that's all. Yet, in spite of all difficulties, I liked Tweel, and I have an odd certainty that he liked me. Crazy, repeated the captain. Just insane. Yeah? Wait and see. A couple of times I've thought that perhaps we... He paused and then resumed his story. Anyway, I finally gave it up and got into my thermal bag to sleep. The fire hadn't kept me any too warm, but that damn sleeping bag did. Got too warm 5 minutes after I closed myself in, so I opened it a little, and wow! Some 80 below zero air hit my nose, and that's when I got this pleasant little frostbite to add to the bump I acquired during the crash of my rocket.